Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Behave yourself. No, on second thought, don't behave yourself.
Hello, everybody. It's a Get With This, Melrose Place. Yeah. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 17, When Cheerleaders Attack. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, Jesus. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Before we get into the attack of the killer cheerleaders and a question mark, a little announcement about Again With This, episode 165. We are wrapping up our spoopy month coverage on October 27th with our episode entitled Let's Watch Daphne Zuniga in The Initiation, an early 80s horror movie that also stars the dad from Charmed.
Right.
And Hunter Tylo, not using that name, and her boobs. Anyway, it's on Tubi. We will link that in the show notes if you want to watch along with us. And you can join us for that episode and all of the myriad episodes before it at againwiththispodcast.com/club. And we hope you do. We have fun.
We do. All right, let's get into it. Starting with our B plot, unfortunately, Michael and Jane's divorce proceeds sort of. Remember how Jane had a cancer scare? Now she's at the hospital with her only friend, Megan, the same person Jane kept accusing of cheating with her fiancé almost right up until the moment that he actually did, to talk to Dr. Moore about the situation. The biopsy was inconclusive, so she recommends a lumpectomy as soon as possible. And Jane agrees, making sure Dr. M knows not to tell Michael anything about it. Dr. M claims it's a big hospital and he doesn't have to know, but he's also a surgeon there. Like, maybe do this at one of LA's many other medical institutions if privacy is actually a concern.
Yeah. Or use your maiden name or something. I don't know. I mean, this is leaving aside the idea that if this is a serious enough lump that she felt it, that Michael, the surgeon, did not feel it during the time in which they were actually having premarital sex. Like, okay.
Did this lump form within the 10 days after she said, let's not, until after the weddings? Like, anyway, proving my point about the size of the hospital, despite what Dr. M said, on her way out, Jane runs into Michael. Clip two.
Oh, well, if it isn't the Jezebel. What are you doing here? Interviewing my colleague so you can get some dirt on me for your crazy lawsuit?
Oh, didn't you hear? Alex Bastian was here having a physical. I just ravaged him in his hospital gown.
Oh, that's a real knee slapper, Jane. You know, I love your sense of humor, and you're going to need it for the deposition tomorrow.
Hi, Michael. How you doing? Jane, you ready to go?
Yeah. Hey, wait, what's with this chummy Jane, you ready to go thing?
Megan and I are going out to lunch.
Yeah, lunch.
Really? Well, this can't be about an innocent burger and fries. Why else would two ex-wives of mine go out if they weren't out to get me? You know what? I forbid it. Don't laugh.
No, too. It's funny. I enjoyed that.
I mean, I really think the play was for them to wordlessly start Frenching, but I'll take it.
Yeah. So Megan cracks that they'd better go before the king beheads them, and when Michael puts a hand on Jane's arm to stop her, because of course he does, she threatens a restraining order. Michael says she's getting scary, and she says she had a good teacher. Well done, everyone in the scene. Honestly, I enjoyed it. We have to call it out when it happens. That night, Megan is doing work at home when Michael comes over to hassle her about making friends with Jane, recounting all the great things he's done for Megan, including marrying her when she was, to quote him, a hooker. When Megan refuses to say why Jane was at the hospital, Michael talks through the possibilities and arrives at Jane being pregnant with Alex's baby, eventually spinning out so much that Megan tells him it's not that. Michael accepts that, but then directly asks if Jane is sick. And Megan says she can't tell him, but seems like she's trying to tell him with her eyes, but her eyes are also bad at acting. And Michael threatens to raise hell at the hospital until he finds out what's going on. Somehow this is what convinces Megan to break Jane's confidence. Like, they have rules about telling ex-husbands people's business at the hospital. Stupid. Honestly. The next day, we join Jane as she is concluding her deposition for the divorce. Michael breezes in late, swears himself in, and is entirely cooperative with all of Lori's questions, taking responsibility for everything, which is when Jane kicks everyone out and correctly guesses that Michael got her secret out of Megan. He cannot pity her, she says. She wants to beat him in the divorce, fair and square. Okay. And the next night at Jane's place, Michael says he looked at her chart and he wants to help her, and then notes that she still hasn't kicked him out, and she admits she doesn't want to be alone. Michael will be here for her. And then it's the next day. Jane is waking up in her hospital bed to a sunny Michael who has brought flowers and congratulates her on a benign lump. While she was in surgery, he thought through their lives together right up to last night. And ignoring all her cues that she doesn't feel the same way, he says the pettiness and mistrust have to end. And they're lucky they're married so they can get right to their honeymoon. And Jane finally manages to stop him and say last night didn't change her mind about the divorce. She needed someone and appreciated his being there as a friend. And increasingly angrily, he reminds her that he's not her friend. He's the guy she wanted to spend the rest of her life with until a few weeks ago. It was not even that long, by the way. Clip 3.
Michael, it's not going to work. I don't want a life of turmoil. I want peace and happiness.
Well, I can be as peaceful and happy as the next guy. But I don't want to be your friend.
Maybe not now, but...
No, never. Do you know why? Because a friend wouldn't pursue the kind of messy divorce that I'm going to throw at you. No, I am going to wipe you out, Jane. I'm going to smear your good name. I'm going to make you wish you never met me. Damn it. How could you do this to us? I'll see you in court.
Drink.
That was, I think, in the entire life of the show, Calabro's absolute worst performance. And mm-hmm. they didn't give him another take because nobody cares anymore.
No.
And I, again, do not blame them.
Indeed. All right, let's move on to the A plot. Eve and Amanda swear Kyle to secrecy on their dark connection, and Lexi embarrasses herself all over town. Before we get into this, content warning for attempted sexual assault. We pick up where we left off right after Amanda's shocking disclosure about having killed someone with Eve. Kyle demands to know who died and what happened, and when he threatens to bring Peter to hear the whole story, both women stop him, and clip 4.
It was 15 years ago. Eve and I were in high school, right down the road from here. Eve's boyfriend was quarterback of the football team, richest boy in school. He thought he was God's gift.
I got your message. You wanted to talk about Eve.
Yeah, Amanda. Wanted you to be the first one to know. I'm gonna dump her.
What?
I wanted to give you a chance at the super bod here. Had my eye on you.
Not interested.
Sure you are.
First of all, you are a conceited, spoiled creep. And second of all, Eve is my best friend, and she loves you.
Okay, so... Heather Locklear in this cheerleader costume pretending to be in high school is an even bigger LOL when it's moving around. Like, it's worse than in the photo.
Yeah.
And LOL some more at Heather Locklear, not at all trying to sound any different than she does as the adult queen bitch of an ad agency. Like, this is just Amanda exactly the way she is any day of the week.
Yeah. It is really hard to overstate how very much over 30 everybody in the scene looks.
Yes.
They've done the minimum effort and, you know, that chong, like photo snap sound effect that mm-hmm. they lifted from fucking Silence of the Lambs, apparently.
Yes.
Hope you like it because they got the rights to it and they're using the shit out of it for the next like 3 episodes. Enjoy.
Oh, we've been getting that since the diary made its appearance. Like, this is what has been cueing every black and white flashback to shit Matt wrote down. But yeah, we had a break from it. It's back. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this guy Kent gets handsy hitting on Amanda. And when we return to the present day, Amanda says he would have raped her if Eve hadn't shown up. And that's when Eve takes over the story. She saw them struggling on the bleachers. And we watch Eve pull Kent off Amanda. He calls Eve a pathetic piece of trash he was only dating to annoy his parents. He pushes her. She rolls down a few levels. And then we get that noise again as flashback Eve pushes Kent off the top of the bleachers to his death. Amanda panicked and ran home. If she had stayed, she might have been able to talk Eve into calling the police. But Eve shoots back that she might have talked Amanda into helping her and they both would have gone to prison. So Eve resumes and we watch as she drags Kent's corpse to a construction ditch that is conveniently nearby and rolls him into it. Someone saw her. She was arrested, and because Amanda's bracelet was in Kent's hand, sloppy, she was also arrested. And the outfit that they show Amanda getting let off in by the cops is, we disagree on this. It's mid-80s accurate. They did not get her a wig. Like, this, it's a tiered sort of lacy situation. It's maybe, if this is supposed to be 1983, it's probably a couple of years too early for this particular outfit.
I guess I was sort of thinking that actually everybody looks like their class of 1980. So that could have been my bad arithmetic. But it, yeah, this outfit looks not quite right. That they bothered, and then they gave her like a Farrah haircut sort of for a scene in which she's shot like in medium to long and has no dialogue. She's just, it's just a perp walk. Like, why are we bothering with this? Sigh.
Yeah, this is supposed to be like the fall of 1983, at which time Heather Locklear was like a primetime soap opera star in her mid-20s. Like, this is not, it's not credible. But anyway, clip five.
My parents could afford good lawyers. My charge was reduced and I got off.
Oh, your parents? Your con artist father who moved you all over the country and your mother who ditched out when you were like eight? Those parents? Who we fucking met on the show?
Yeah.
There were ways to set this up where you did not have to hang every light within reach on the fact that nobody currently working on the show has watched the show before like season five.
Yeah.
So frustrating.
Yeah, but this is the story we get.
Yep, sure is.
Kent's parents wanted someone to blame. That was Eve. No one believed Amanda when she testified that Kent attacked her. And the story went that Eve was a gold digger who went crazy when she heard Kent was going to dump her. Kyle has been very patiently listening to this tale, but now it's time for him to speak. Clip six.
So you guys were best friends, and then you don't see each other until Eve shows up at the club looking for a job?
No. I was in prison just outside San Francisco. Amanda came to visit me once a month. Every month for the last 15 years.
All those trips to San Francisco.
Eve and I made a pact not to tell anyone. Matt was the only one who knew because he was counseling AIDS patients at the prison, and he saw me one day.
So that's what was on the missing journal page? Peter has a right to know.
Kyle, please, it's in the past, it's over. It's not who I am anymore.
No, Eve, your past makes you who you are. If you're not going to tell him, I am.
Kyle. Eve lost 15 years because she was protecting me. I think she deserves some happiness.
I think she deserves to have had her case adjudicated in juvenile court and not done the full 15, but what the fuck do I know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Also, like, if Amanda's parents allegedly came together for this situation to deal with it, like, they could not have done anything to help Eve? Like, what was Eve's situation? We don't hear that at all.
Yeah. Ugh. I just, like, if you're going to be this soapy about it, like, I just kept picturing Paul Johansson in Soap Dish dashing in his little unitard to be like, I was doing leg presses when I heard that you had to have a brain transplant or whatever the fuck it is. Like,
yeah.
If you're going to be that. And be more interesting. Like, don't be so tiresome and take so long to get to the Boar Works factory that we're nitpicking shit like this. Just go nuts.
But for real. Anyway, Kyle doesn't disagree that Eve deserves happiness, but he also thinks Peter has the right to know all of this before he marries Eve. And he is about to leave the room and get Peter when Amanda stops him, because if anyone finds out Amanda's connected to a murder, it will ruin her business. Maybe. And their lives. Okay. Like, also, I feel like, of all people, alias Peter Burns would understand how to keep a felonious secret, you know?
Yeah. Also, business.
Yes.
She was married to a gangster and fucking his brother.
Right.
Do you want to get this scrubbed from the Google that I believe now exists in their timeline? Then you should do that, because you're Amanda Woodward. Otherwise, this is all completely insane and boring somehow. Ugh.
Yeah. And yet, somehow, Kyle is convinced not to insist that they tell Peter. And after the credits, three people are trying to act normal and have a wedding, while the fourth has no idea anything untoward is going on. And we actually get some vows. Clip 7.
Peter, I never thought this day would come. All the heartache and sadness that touched my life before has vanished. Now all I feel is joy. I love you, Peter. I promise to love you forever.
Eve, I pledge my love to you. And I promise that our future will be together forever. Why don't you say what you have to say? Because I'd really like to kiss my bride now.
Well, by the power vested in me, I pronounce you husband and wife.
Thanks, Smitty.
I mean, even Wagner is like, I pledge my love to you. Like, he got a tea time, do ya? Okay.
As they kiss, Kyle and Amanda catch each other's eyes, and she mouths a thank you to him. But Kyle still doesn't look too psyched about this. Later, in their comfy clothes, Amanda celebrates the end of Peter being tortured and disclaims credit for getting him together with Eve. She just feels everyone is married to the right person now. Wrong! Wrong!
Yep.
Very wrong.
All wrong.
Eve and Kyle come out just behind them, Eve thanking him again for keeping their secret. She says she hopes they can be friends, and Kyle hopes that too, but in a sinister way. And he has just the top button of his jacket buttoned like a 50s co-ed. Like, I don't approve. I don't get this choice.
Yeah. And it's also massive.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're entering that, like, Noel Crane giant sweater, the waiting room in Beetlejuice
era
of men's styling. It's not great.
No. So as everyone gets ready to head out, Amanda thanks Kyle and is like, look how happy they are. But Kyle snits that secrets have a way of coming out. And when Peter finds out this one, Kyle hopes he's not around. And Amanda's like, he won't find out. And Kyle looks even more pissed. And when Amanda returns to the agency with Kyle for some reason, the whole bullpen is full of mothers holding babies for a commercial casting session. The baby food client rejected the twins they cast, so that's why this is happening on very short notice. And he tries to hand the baby he's holding to Amanda, who refuses. Good girl. So it's on Kyle, and then it's that thing where a man soothes a fussy baby immediately because he'd be such a good dad. And unfortunately, even Amanda is not immune to this display. It's corny, but it's a trope for a reason. Peter and Eve run up the stairs to their room at this chateau, horny for their first night as spouses, but someone's already in there, naked in front of the fire. Clip 8.
I took the first flight I could get, Doctor. I figured our conversation should continue face to face. Well, body to body.
Lexi!
Oh, my God.
What is she doing here?
Me?
What are you doing here?
Oh, whoa, I thought you were here to grieve for your father.
No, I came here to get married to Eve.
But wait a minute. On the phone this morning, I told you that I loved you. What?
The phone went dead before I could tell her about the wedding.
Have you completely lost your mind? You don't even know her.
I'm not the one who's here uninvited, naked, with a robe wrapped around her, about ready to get thrown out of here on her butt. Come on. Come on.
I mean, everybody's making pretty good points, but I think you all have issues with the writers and you should go work those out. Like, now.
Yeah. Fucking Lexi, though, this truly is a new low, and he drags her outside, naked in a blanket. She snits that his first mistake was marrying that nobody, and the second was forgetting Lexi knows he had Amanda kidnapped. And it was at this point, as I alluded to in our last podcast, where I was like, well, Peter and I have something in common, because I forgot that also. Like, it feels like it was 7 years ago.
Yeah, it does.
Lexi could have Peter locked up, so if she says he has to divorce, he's gonna. Slams her against the stone wall, don't love that, and says if he had Amanda kidnapped, then Lexi should imagine what he could do to her, and Lexi is shook! Peter goes back to Eve and says Lexi will never bother them again. Nothing will ever come between them, and they schmoop at each other, but the score is concerned.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Back in LA the next day, Ryan and Amanda are leaving a meeting where she was noticeably distracted. He jokes about what could possibly be more important than a $500,000 account. And digging through her purse, she admits that lately she cares less about success than spending more time with Kyle. And she's still looking down as she steps into the street just ahead of a mail truck screaming around the corner. Ryan pulls her out of the way and clip 9.
If you don't start paying attention, Amanda, you're not going to spend another second with Kyle.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
I missed that. That was such a good catch.
He's trying. He's trying.
I guess.
It's just not going to work. No. For a lot of reasons.
Very true. Speaking of Kyle, when we see him next, he's serving Lexi at the bar at the Rock and Roll Club. She is celebrating Peter's nuptials. As she rants on about Kyle's own happy marriage, Kyle announces that he's cutting her off. And on stage, a person named John Ernst, who I guess is a musical artist of the day, invites the crowd to pick up the beat. Lexi walks toward him, heckling, and no one stops her as she gets on the stage, still spraying insults. And Megan walks in just as Lexi is pitching this John Ernst a song called The Dumped One's Revenge. Still, no one who actually works at the establishment, including Kyle, intervenes when Lexi takes the mic to unleash a self-pitying monologue. And as the crowd mildly boos, it falls to Megan to try to get her down, although the McBros join her, and when Lexi struggles, she ends up flat on her face on the dance floor before Ryan picks her up and removes her and walks her through the restaurant. Like, the club has a street-level entrance. We have seen it many times. Why would you make a scene in Kyle's alleged fine dining establishment?
No. Fireman's carry, side door. Come on. Ugh.
Anyway, before long, Ryan also has to deal with Megan bleeding at him that she is an independent woman and she doesn't need his help, as Lexi falls off the bar and Megan decides, okay, maybe I do need help. And in the next scene, Ryan and Megan are dropping Lexi onto her bed and then arguing about which of them will stay, while behind them, Lexi climbs out over the balcony railing and starts yelling, clip 10.
He's gonna kill me!
Oh my God, Lexi!
Somebody help me!
Give me, come on!
Somebody help me! He's gonna kill me!
Oh, wait, Ryan! Ryan's not gonna kill you. We're here to help you.
No, not Ryan, you ninny, Peter!
Peter's gonna kill me.
Lexi, just take my hand.
He says if I don't keep my mouth shut, thumbs down for me. Just because I love him, I get the thumbs down. And he knows who to call. He knows how to have it done.
Lexi, no!
This
is crazy.
You saved me.
Oh my God.
You saved me. I was gonna die and you saved me. Oh, my bed. Oh God, I love my bed.
Well, it's nice we have one thing in common, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, not the worst ripshit drunk imitation I've ever heard, but like, talk about siloing all the characters who are just a flat line in the interest of my heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Over to Amanda's as she calls around looking for Kyle just before he walks in. She asks if Ryan told him about the truck, which he did not. So she goes on. Clip 11.
I know this sounds strange, but I think it's another sign.
Sign?
Like seeing you with the baby.
What are you talking about, signs?
In the last few days, things have been happening that seem important, like I'm supposed to pay attention, like seeing how wonderful you look with a baby and almost being run over. And I think it's another sign to remind me that you never know when your time is up. I'm rattling on. I am so sorry.
It's okay, but we are going to stop the panic. Okay?
Okay.
I will make the place nice and cozy. Mm-hmm. You slip into something sexy.
Sounds perfect.
So Kyle puts a record on when Amanda yells and, oh my God, it turns out to be because she forgot to reorder her birth control pills. And that means it's time for them to make a baby. And Amanda's made Kyle the happiest man in the world. And it turns into that meme where it's like, does everyone consent? I do, not me. And the not me is Jesus, except in this case, I am Jesus. And I do not consent to these two having a baby.
No. I mean, the biological clock story could not be in worse hands right now. Sarah D. Bunting dislikes this.
Mm-hmm. The next morning, Megan and Ryan wake up with their heads together on Lexi's couch. Megan grudgingly says what Ryan did for Lexi was nice, and he reiterates that they aren't and never were a couple. And behind them, Lexi clears her throat and thanks them for pulling her through her last hurrah as the pathetic Lexi. She is done worrying about men. It's just money, power, and success for her from now on. Well, we'll see. For her first good deed, she confirms Ryan's claim that he never liked her. And furthermore, clip 12.
And the hardest thing for me in our short and, well, slightly perverse relationship was knowing that you and Megan belong together. I see it. I mean, you guys have this spark between you two. It's electric.
Oh.
No.
Oh, no. No, it really is.
It's not anything like electric.
No, not at all. Megan slips out and Lexi notes that she didn't deny it. And on the highway somewhere, Kyle is driving Amanda to a picnic on the beach when they run out of gas. Not something adults do, I feel.
No.
He decides to set up on the bluff they've randomly stopped at, and they both agree this would be a great spot to build a dream house they would like to see slide into the ocean in the next 15 years. Also, not sure Kyle is responsible enough to manage a project like that if he can't even keep his car gassed up. But what do you know? The lot is for sale, and it's another sign, but it's for too much money. And Kyle wishes he could give Amanda the world, but she just needs one of his sandwiches. And back in Oakhurst, Peter walks Eve into a wine cellar with an iron gate, which, when he closes it behind them, triggers their PTSD of getting locked in her cell. Peter has set up a romantic dinner for them here, and Eve tries to keep it together through more flashbacks, but Peter does finally notice just before she breathlessly blurts that she can't do this and runs out, explaining she has a fear of being locked away and forgotten instead of just, I am claustrophobic? Like, lots of people who've never been incarcerated might not want to dine in a cell with the door closed, Peter.
Yeah, really.
But anyway, no, he doesn't think Eve is crazy, and everyone's afraid of something. For instance, he's afraid of losing her, but when he hugs her, he does look worried. And then we're back at the rock and roll club, which is established with a shot of the street level entrance. Just saying. Yes, this John Ernst character was not too freaked out by the previous night's events, so he has a return to play, I assume, his same four songs again. And Amanda and Kyle are at the bar when Lexi appears to apologize for her behavior the previous night and for all of her shit, basically. And the faces they both give her to this are like, they don't even say anything. They're just like, not even, uh-huh. It's completely blank. It's almost impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can see it in the visual aids. Lexi has realized that people who are successful are trustworthy, not drunk public messes. I'm paraphrasing. And Amanda is silent while Kyle manages a tiny thank you. When Lexi is left, they agree she's full of shit. And the next day, a black stretch limo delivers an old man to the lot for sale, but it's not just any old man. It's Judge Hadley, played by David Dobkin in many previous episodes. And as we recently learned this year, the pilot of The Streets of San Francisco. He is the seller and exposits that he turned down Kyle's purchase offer. Kyle knows it was low, but it's everything he has. And he heard from his agent that Judge H visits the property every Friday. He's sorry Kyle wasted his time, but Kyle still bores him with the whole story about how he and Amanda found the place. And the judge calls Kyle's destiny talk hogwash. Kyle is not sure he believes in signs either, but lists some of the ones he and Amanda have dealt with recently. He just wants to build his wife her dream house. And guess what? The judge bought this property for his wife's dream house. But the day they were going to break ground, she died in a car crash and he couldn't do it after that. Kyle wouldn't have gotten the place out of his mind if he hadn't tried again. And the judge can't blame him for trying. And that night, Lexi tells Julie, the mole assistant she poached from Amanda's agency, to send Amanda flowers. Julie is gagged that Lexi and Amanda really did make peace, and Lexi says it's easier to get close enough to stab a friend than an enemy. So, God, this is still fucking going on. Megan's also still at work when Ryan calls to ask her to dinner, and she gives him a maybe next time, which I guess he takes as a huge progress, but unfortunately, no one cares! No one cares about these three, any of them, honestly. No. No one cares.
Accurate.
And then Amanda's meeting Kyle at the lot in the dead of night. When she sees now there's a sold sticker on the for sale sign, she calls that a definite sign for them to move on. But before they leave, Kyle thinks they should check out one more sign and turns on his headlights to illuminate a welcome home Amanda banner over a table set for two, because surprise, the buyer is Kyle. And then a swirling horror movie camera takes us through the courtyard into Peter's door. Eve hears a knock and goes to see what's up, but when she raises the blinds, it's good old dead Kent calling her a bitch, and she wakes up gasping. And Peter tries to soothe her, but she knows it was no ordinary nightmare, and that's where we leave things for now. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Judge Hadley? It was nice.
Yeah. I mean, he did manage to unload this property that honestly looks like a dog.
Yeah.
So, good for him.
Mm-hmm. Least valuable player. Megan, learn how to keep a secret. Jesus Christ.
Amanda, what are you doing? Come on.
Yeah, babies are not for you. Let's be real.
No.
No one buys this for you.
Yeah, and that's okay. Nice Simon again with this. Speaking of things that aren't okay. It's too soon for Jane to be dating other people. It's too late for us to be caring about fucking Ryan dating anyone. And it's too bad Kyle thinks his boys can't swim. You can dive into the late 90s-est of late 90s fashions and our visual aids. We've done them for every episode of this podcast, and you'll find them at againwiththispodcast.com. We are on Blue Sky at Again With This. We are on Instagram at instagram.com/againwiththispodcast. You can call or text us 210-920-4699. And you can complain about Lexi or defend her. We don't know your lives. On our Discord. That is available for club members at, unsurprisingly, againwiththispodcast.com/club. I'm best lawyer your parents could buy, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Electric, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, loves his bed. Talk to you next time.
Kiss my butt.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.